The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
One of the Buddha's central understandings or realizations was seeing that we are habitually looking for happiness and security and a stable resting place in that which is inherently incapable of providing us that. And the Buddha saw deeply how the world of conditioned experiences to which we habitually try to cling, try to hold on, try to claim as I, me, and mine is this realm of experience is inherently unstable and ungovernable and unable to be a lasting source of refuge or satisfaction. And so he set off on this quest. He spent years dedicating his life to practice looking for, trying to realize a peace, a happiness that is not subject to the comings and goings and ephemerality and ungovernability of our conditioned experience. And the good news for all of us is that he was successful in his search. He found what he called the ultimate refuge, the security from bondage, the highest happiness, the peace of Nibbana. And in order to realize, to be able to taste and be freed into this reality of the end of suffering, we need to learn to release our fixation on those things, those aspects of experience that are not able to be a lasting source of satisfaction. Now, this is a path of moving towards deeper and deeper and more refined joy and happiness and peace. So we need to, again, learn to release our fixation on these lesser forms of pleasure or some kind of happiness that we get through gratifying our sense craving or clinging to identities or ideas or our bodies or anything in the conditioned world. And we need to release this this fixation, this grasping, in order to open to the peace of the unconditioned. And so this progression of moving from coarser or grosser forms of pleasure or happiness, moving from sensuality, like being fixated on pleasant sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, all of the allure of the physical world, food, physical comfort, beautiful places, sexual pleasures, etc., etc. But moving from this coarser level to on the way, we first learn to release this by depending on a higher happiness, the higher happiness of states of concentration, of peace, of bliss that come through kind of a depth of meditative experience. And these are much more refined, much more wholesome, much more deeply satisfying than the pleasure that comes through sensuality or seeing ourselves the way we like, or having others see us the way we like, or having this role or this identity or this kind of status or wealth or power. That there's a much deeper pleasure and happiness that we learn to recognize that is much more satisfying and much, much more connected to a sense of deeper health and well-being. These meditative states, the wholesome pleasure of tranquility or calm or bliss. And yet even these, which are helpful and necessary along the way, even these states are also impermanent. They also are not an ultimate refuge. And so when we get to a certain stage of maturity of practice, we can actually learn to let go of even that. And we learn to let go of these wholesome states in favor of, again, the highest happiness of the unconditioned. And one of the primary tools that the Buddha would employ in this progressive refinement of deeper and deeper states of joy and happiness and peace is evaluating the experiences that we find ourselves clinging to through the lens of what are often called the three characteristics. And the Pali is the language that the Buddha's teachings were originally recorded in, and very, very closely related to the language that the Buddha is thought to have spoken, very, very closely related. So the Pali for these three characteristics is anicca. Anicca means inconstancy or impermanence. And dukkha. Dukkha means stress or unease or unsatisfactoriness. And anatta. Anatta meaning not self. Not I, not me, not mine. Or not having an essential core or abiding essence. And these three perceptions, or these three, the Buddha referred to them as perceptions, actually. They're often talked about as the three characteristics. That was a later interpretation of the teachings. The Buddha referred to them as perceptions that we are to cultivate. We bring these three perceptions to bear, learn to see all of what's happening in our world, in our experience, through this lens as a tool to let go of the tendency to crave and cling and try to hold on. so that we can let go of these coarser, more stress-laden aspects of experience in favor of that which brings a higher, deeper kind of happiness. And so the last couple of times I was here, I talked a little bit about the first of these, anicca or inconstancy or impermanence, and how we are to cultivate the perception, the recognition, or the understanding that everything that arises in our experience, every sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, idea, identity, belief, everything that arises in our experience is inconstant. It is whatever is of the nature to arise, all that is of the nature to pass away. This is a teaching that occurs again and again throughout the discourses of the Buddha. This understanding, this actual specific phrase is often associated with people's the moment of awakening, the moment of enlightenment of many of the people in the discourses. They'll have their deep realization, whatever is of the nature to arise, all that is of the nature to pass away. And this is associated with a knowledge that leads to release. And the second of these characteristics, dukkha or stress or unsatisfactoriness, uneasiness, this often is talked about as following on directly from this first characteristic of impermanence. I'll read again another very frequent stock passage in the discourses of the Buddha, where the understanding of stress follows directly as a result of understanding the nature of inconstancy. So here the Buddha is talking to a group of his monks, and he says, "What do you think, monks? Is form constant or inconstant?" "Inconstant." "And is that which is inconstant easeful or stressful?" "Stressful." "And is it fitting to regard what is inconstant, stressful, subject to change as this is mine, this is myself, this is what I am?" And they respond, "No." And he continues going through all the different categories of aspects of our experience. So from form to feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, to perception, this recognition, this kind of mental conceptualizing or labeling of what it is that we're experiencing. And then fabrications is this vast category that includes mind states and thoughts and ideas and pretty much any quality of mind and consciousness. So all of this is one way of describing the entirety of our experience: form, feeling, perception, mental fabrications, and consciousness. All of that is inconstant. And the Buddha says, is what is inconstant easeful or stressful? And they respond, stressful. And the Buddha says, seeing thus, the instructed disciple grows disenchanted with form, disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, disenchanted with fabrications, disenchanted with consciousness. Disenchanted, they become dispassionate, and through dispassion, they are released. This is a very frequent teaching of the Buddhas throughout the discourses. So we are to reflect on is what I'm clinging to or going for, is it constant or inconstant? Is it permanent or impermanent? And then knowing that it's impermanent, is that easeful or is that stressful? Is that suitable? Is it worth clinging to? Really, that's the question that it comes down to. Is it worth clinging to? So this is Ajahn Chah is a beloved teacher from the lived in the 20th century in Thailand, and he was the teacher to Ajahn Sumedho and Jack Kornfield and many teachers in the insight scene, and. Kitty Sorrow, was a student of Ajahn Chah, and he tells the story of being with Ajahn Chah and talking with him about, he was having questions about disrobing. He wanted to disrobe and go back to the West and continue school and do this and that, and Ajahn Chah. So he would tell Ajahn Chah, yeah, I want to go back and, finish school and get a doctorate. And Ajahn Chah said, okay, and then what? And then he'd say, okay, well, then I'll probably, do this or get this kind of job. And Ajahn Chah said, okay, and then what? And think, oh, maybe I'll do this. And then he just kept asking, and then what? And then what? And then what? Are any of those going to be ultimately satisfying? What he's pointing to is, are you going to arrive at some place where you will have satisfaction and stability and refuge? He would point to this in another way. Tanisara, another teacher, actually Kitty Sorrow's partner, tells the story of meeting Ajahn Chah, and he asked the question, have you had enough yet? Have you had enough yet? Pointing to, again, this realization that the experiences that we're normally so fixated on, that we normally put so much energy into getting out of some idea, some hope that they'll be satisfying. It's this recognition that there's actually not that much satisfaction to be had there. It's not a denial of the pleasure or of the satisfaction that is there. The Buddha said it's important to recognize the relative pleasure of the gratification of our craving, of our desire. And he said, but it's crucial to weigh that against the drawbacks. So recognizing the gratification of going for whatever thing it is that we're craving. Yes, there will be some pleasure, likely, if we get that. But what are the drawbacks? What are the sometimes translated as the danger in following this craving, the danger in seeking gratification in the sensual world? Well, for one, we bind ourselves ever more tightly to needing pleasure, to needing to have pleasant sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, and needing to be able to get rid of unpleasant in order for us to have some quality of well-being, so in order for us to be at ease and be satisfied. And the Buddha said, he used this image. He said, for one who is bound to sensuality. So in other words, one who is fixated upon only having things feel good and not wanting things to feel bad. He said, for this person, there is the pleasure that they get when things do feel good, when they do get the whatever, the comfort, the food, the praise, the whatever kinds of things people might be craving, that there is some pleasure there when we are able to gratify that. But the drawback is even greater, because he gives this example of someone who is craving who's craving comfort and pleasure of in the body, and he said, and when this person is subject to the burning sun and biting flies, biting mosquitoes, to the aches and pains of an aging body, to illness, this person, the degree to which that person is bound up with sensuality, with depending on feeling pleasant, that's the degree to which that person will suffer when they are inevitably confronted with these experiences of discomfort, of pain. And he said that nobody can escape unpleasant physical contact, unpleasant mental contact. Nobody can escape the stress, the pain of aging and illness, of separation. And so we recognize the drawbacks of clinging to sensuality, of clinging to even to clinging to mind states, clinging to our bodies, clinging to our identities. And yet we recognize that we still keep coming back again and again, clinging, trying to hold on. And so in seeing this, one of the ways that we, as we start to really see the drawbacks more and more deeply and want to orient in a different way, want to orient towards a peace and a happiness and a well-being that doesn't depend on our bodies feeling pleasant or things being how we like them to be in our lives or in the world, that we turn to the path of practice. And one of the tools here is applying these perceptions of inconstancy, stress, not self. And a couple of passages where the Buddha describes this, he says, the perception of stress in what is inconstant, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. It gains a footing in the deathless, and it has the deathless as its final end. The deathless is another term for the peace of Nibbana. And again, here in the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, all things are cre all created things are dukkha. Dukkha meaning in unsatisfactory or on some level stressful. All created things are dukkha. Seeing this with insight, one becomes disenchanted with dukkha. This is the path to peace. So sometimes Buddhism gets a bad rap, being pessimistic or focused on suffering. But the Buddha was offering us a therapy to address suffering. He talked a lot about suffering because this was what he wanted to learn to gain freedom from, learn to overcome. And so understanding the nature of suffering and offering and discovering a path of practice and offering that to all of us as a way to realize the highest happiness. One of the tools that he offered to realizing this highest happiness is training ourselves to see that which is not that as actually inherently somewhat either stressful or unsatisfactory. Because we have such deep habits to keep fixating on pleasant sights, sounds, smells, body sensations, ideas, mind states, etc. And the Buddha said to continually remind ourselves that these things are unsatisfactory in the sense that they're unable to be a lasting source of satisfaction. And the more that we can deeply relate to conditioned experience as having this characteristic of dukkha, the more able we are to taste and to gain access to the peace and well-being and deep inner health of Nibbana that is beyond what is arising in our bodies and minds. And so there's a lot more to say here on this topic, but I wanted to leave a few minutes for questions or comments or observations. Can be about what I've talked about tonight, or I'm also open to, you're also very welcome to just share or ask about anything in your practice. Yeah, David.
Yeah, it's not about my practice, it's about what you've been talking about. And I find it really tricky in the sense that things like dispassion and the search for ultimate happiness seems like they can themselves become things that I am grasping for or grasping at or trying to get to somehow. And one thing I like about Buddhist philosophy and practice is that it's experimental. You know, you have to find out for yourself. And I just something you just said, things that are unable to be a lasting source of pleasure. I find artistic experiences are, even though they've come and they've gone, they have opened, they've caused me to be still. Mm-hmm. They've caused me to be out of myself, where myself is still. The self is not there in a sense. And they remain as lasting sources of fulfillment and satisfaction. So, and that is a sensual, pleasant kind of experience. So I struggle with Buddhism sometimes, although the practice is great. And I'm coming back after many years of being away of Buddhist practice to finding a regular meditation practice, finding it very useful to understand my mind and what my mind does. And I probably could study my mind about what I just said and see where that's coming from. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there and see if you had anything to say.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. So the first part, I'd like to say a word about that it can seem like we are holding on to or reaching for ultimate happiness or peace or dispassion. And there's a phrase, there's a couple of things from the teachings that come to mind in response to that. One phrase that the Buddha used sometimes is, depending on this, we abandon this. Depending upon this, abandoning that. So this is kind of this stepwise, like using a higher happiness as a support. Do we let go of a lower source of pleasure? And it kind of moves upward in a refined, more and more refined way, a kind of a progressive way. You grab the next rung on the ladder, and then, and only when you grab the next rung, and it's not until you have a good hold on the next rung that you let go of the lower rung. And until you have progressed far enough where you can actually step off of the ladder and stand on solid ground. And that's when actually even the practice itself gets let go of. Even the search for happiness, the search is let go of because you've actually arrived. And that's when everything gets let go of. And an image that the Buddha used for this is that of a raft. That if you have to cross an expanse of water, if you're to get to the further shore where there is safety, if you're on the near shore where you are, there's danger. You need to get across this water to the further shore of safety. That was an image for freedom. He said that you have to hold on to the raft until you get across. And then once you've gotten across onto solid ground, then you can let go of the raft. And actually, it's probably detrimental to hold on to try to hold on to the raft at that point, because it's big and unwieldy and heavy, and so you put it down when you don't need it. But you have to hold on until you're there, otherwise you're going to fall into the water. So it's this kind of progressive. So in response to the second thing you said, perhaps these more wholesome forms of pleasure like art are ways that support letting go of less helpful, less skillful ways of seeking pleasure. And then, you know, things like that, and also meditative experiences, we can recognize that, you know, they come and go, and that it does take calling them up into the mind and the memory of them to draw pleasure from them again. And then there are times when we're really feel really they're not there. There are times when we're feeling caught in something else. And that's one way of seeing the inconstancy of them. So that, you know, maybe they are more lasting. You're moving in the right direction, but there is something that actually is completely outside of the realm of change, which is the peace that is possible. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Pat. And sorry, Pat, I just want to acknowledge that we're at time now. So if anyone needs to bow out, thank you very much for your time. But I'm happy to stick around to continue answering questions. Pat.
Just very briefly, thank you for this discussion. One thing that I didn't think about, and this is brought up, is, you know, the qualities of anicca, dukkha, and anatta are so interrelated.
Yes.
It's like three sides of the similar coins as they come and go. I'm an artist too. I was a sculptor and a potter of sorts. And there's nothing more consistent than a pot. However, when that stuff built up and I moved and I had to give it away or get rid of it or see it go even to the landfill, that was a real interesting point. But as time went on, my day job is working with food. I went on and was trained as a chef, a low level chef. And there's nothing more inconstant than food. And so it's been an interesting, and sitting with a Buddhist practice looking at the ideas as they come and go has been, it's been interesting, and I don't know about enlightening, but because I sometimes think I'm a slow learner, but I very much appreciate these sessions. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Pat. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Padma.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks, Ari, for staying extra. I think to the earlier point, I do find sometimes it's kind of pessimistic to think that, okay, if I get this job, I'll survive. And so some of the practical aspects of life unfortunately exist, right? So, to your earlier discussion of, about Ajahn Chah asking what's next, right? But sometimes you have to do that, to be able to live. But I feel like the idea is not to cling to it, right? Obviously, like if I have two job offers, I'm going to take the one the better. There is some, greed there, but that's a practical part of living life, right? You
Well, that
can't
can
get
be,
away with that.
yeah, that can be discernment too, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And so the context for Ajahn Chah talking to Kittisaro was a monk at the time. So that's an important part of the context, and so that I think that Ajahn Chah could recognize in Kittisaro that there was some worldly clinging, that it wasn't just discern. This was when he was I think a pretty new monk, and without the level of wisdom that he had many years later when he finally decided to disrobe. And I think that Ajahn Chah was recognizing the pull towards fixating on, oh, if I get this or do this or get that, and that'll really do it for me. And so, yeah, like you said, the clinging, the fixation, the believing that these things are going to be an end in and of themselves. So that's part of what needs to be let go of and to be released. And yeah, we need to be good stewards of our lives. It's very skillful to take care of the conditions in our lives, and like you said, to discern, oh, this taking this job offer over this one will probably be beneficial. And we need to take care around the logistics of our lives, be good stewards of our lives, but also ask ourselves, where is it that we're looking in our lives for refuge and happiness? Yeah, so that we can be fully in the world, be participating in it skillfully, but not looking to this or that, these conditions in the world, for security or for happiness, because ultimately even what seems like very secure, we have to part with. We have to let go of. There's nothing, in the suttas, the Buddha was talking to a king about this, and the king said, well, I have an army, and I have, tons of wealth and gold, and what do you mean in security and stability? And he said, will you get to keep any of that when you die, or will any of that protect you from the pain of illness? And sometimes people don't have these reckonings until the end of their lives, if even then. And so we can learn to orient in a more skillful way to be fully in our lives, but to be wise about what it is that's happening here, what it is that we're in relationship to, so that we're not looking for things to be more permanent or controllable than they actually are, because we have influence, and we need to exercise that responsibly, but we don't have control, ultimate control, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, well, thank you all very much. And I'll do a brief dedication of merit. Just may the goodness of our practice, may that ripple out and be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all beings, without exception, be free.